This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca. 2024 saw that bear dispatches went down compared to 2023 in Prince George. In fact, according to a statement on BC Conservation's Facebook page, conservation officers in British Columbia dispatched 303 black bears in 2024, which was a 49.7% drop from the 603 black bears dispatched in 2023. According to the service, this is also the lowest number since the Conservation Officers Service predator statistics were first published online in 2011. 2024 also saw 10,000 fewer black bear conflict calls reported to the Report a Poacher or Polluter hotline compared to 2023, with 17,345. Only 1.7% of the 17,345 calls led to black bears being dispatched. In studio with me today, I have Nicole Botten joining us with the Northern Bear Awareness Society in Prince George. Thank you so much for joining. You mentioned some of the variables that go into this. There are so many factors at play. One of course is the availability of food in our area, whether that food is available in the forest and whether or not the bears might come into our human habited areas to make up that difference.
Yeah, the garbage. Yeah, you're right. Two different food topics that will greatly influence the number of bears coming into our community and how many are consequently destroyed due to perceived conflict with humans. So first, the natural foods, that fluctuates due to climatic conditions and natural cycles, right? Ecology, we try to track it. But there was lots of speculation about 2023 when we had hundreds of bears in all parts of our community where bears aren't usually going. And we had the 80 bears destroyed. There were lots of forest fires around. There was some drought happening, which influenced berry crops. And that often seems to relate to how many bears are coming into town because they're looking for other food sources. And then those other food sources being mainly garbage, also apple trees in the fall, smaller attractants like compost that's not tended properly or bird feeders are actually a pretty significant one, and so on. Definitely other like social factors, like who's in the community and are they aware of what a bear attractant is and how to keep their yard secure for bears. So what to do with their garbage and how to be safe around bears. So that draws bears in. Even if there is enough food out in the wilderness, they pass through our community because we have great bear habitat here. And if they smell it, they come investigate it. It's an easy food source. They'll come back. They'll stay. It also influences their natural cycles. So the more unnatural food that bears receive, like garbage, the more, it's not a healthy food for them, but the more healthy they'll be. Like they put on more weight, they'll have more fat to keep them through the winter. A bit of bear biology is that sows in their dens, they give birth in the winter in their den. And the number of cubs that they'll have is dependent on their body weight and their health. So if the female bear is big and fat when she goes into her den, she could have four cubs, and that could be a result of unnatural food sources. So we're artificially inflating the bear population around our community, which sort of is a, I guess, a positive feedback kind of cycle.
That's a very interesting factor.
Yeah, it's something that not everybody thinks about. I think people are aware that we shouldn't leave garbage for bears, but they're not aware of the depth to which it contributes to the problem. Not only that, is that these are what we call problem bears, but they're just bears that have been food conditioned. And the sows that give birth to those cubs, if they were already a garbage bear, they're going to come back and teach their cubs how to be a garbage bear. So then you have more and more of the same problem.
You have that intergenerational transfer of knowledge of where the food is.
Mm-hmm, yeah, absolutely.
A big factor of the presence of bears in our community kind of revolves around the idea that it's kind of our fault in the sense that human activity creates a lot of attractants, and there are some things that we can do to minimize that. How can we correct our behavior?
Well, ideally, as we approach spring, which pretty soon bears will be coming out of their dens in as early as March, so we need people to start thinking about that now, because once a bear gets attracted to these unnatural food sources, it's going to just keep coming back for them. If we can prevent that in the first place, being proactive, that would be the best. So people like to feed birds in the winter, chickadees. They're so tiny and they're cute. We want to give them extra food, right? But we need to take the bird feeders down before March so that bears don't find them. Just little things like that. Putting our garbage out only on garbage day. Smelly things that obviously would attract a bear. You put it in the freezer until garbage day if you can, like separate it from your other waste. I could go on and on about this kind of thing.
We were also able to secure another expert who also participated in the City of Prince George's Bear Awareness Committee.
My name is Dr. Lauren Harding. I am an assistant professor in the Department of Ecosystem Science and Management. I like to say that right off the bat that I'm not a biologist. I'm a social scientist with training in environmental anthropology. So my research is around human relationships with the non-human world. And I have a background in studying human-bear conflict, but studying the human dimensions of human-bear conflict.
What are some communities that seem to be having a successful or more successful relationships here in British Columbia between human-bear interactions?
Well, for the ones that we can really point towards are those that have gained Bear Smart status. Bear Smart status is a designation that communities can apply to get once they've met certain sort of standards that have been laid out in a provincial guideline designed by biologists, including Dr. Lana Cirnello. And Lana helped write the Bear Smart program, and it has standards and different things that communities can do in order to prevent conflict. Prince George, we do not have Bear Smart status. Northern Bear Awareness Society is a nonprofit volunteer-driven group that has been working towards advocating for Prince George to try and meet Bear Smart status, but we do not have it currently. I was on the City of Prince George Bear Awareness Committee that was convened this summer, and we gave a report and recommendations to City Council in the fall, and one of our recommendations was to try and achieve Bear Smart status. So there is some pretty comprehensive guidelines out there for communities in how to mitigate conflict. It's whether communities kind of take up that challenge or not. That seems to be up to each individual municipality.
What can we do from, say, a higher level to mitigate this issue? And what are some barriers or obstacles that we may have to overcome to achieve those standards or, mm-hmm. or regulations to get into Bear Smart territory?
Well, as anyone who works in human-bear conflict will tell you, the main source of human-bear conflict is food attractants, typically in the form of garbage. So waste management is number one on the recommendations, changes to the waste management system. Now, a barrier to that is cost.
Right.
Bear-resistant garbage cans are expensive. Implementing entire new garbage bins throughout a municipal waste management system is expensive. Unlike some of the other southern communities, Prince George is a working class industry town. It doesn't have the same sort of property tax base, say, as communities like Whistler or Nelson. And the expense of implementing bear-resistant bins is substantial. But at the same time, it's very, very effective. Bear-resistant bins were piloted in the Rocky Mountain Park, so in Banff and Jasper in the 1980s after some serious fatal attacks. And within about a decade, bear attacks became very, very rare. So waste management really is key. Part of that is because bears, as carrion eaters, they're really more scavengers than hunters in some ways. I mean, again, not a biologist, but this is what we know about them. And they'll defend a high-calorie food source. When you leave a bin of garbage that's full of food waste on your driveway, suddenly you have a high-calorie food source that a bear might want to defend on your property, in your home, in your residential area. that's really a problem. I mean, and we can't blame them for thinking that they won the lottery if they find a bin full of meat scraps. So the instinct to defend that food source and to act aggressively around that food source is what causes a lot of conflict. Conservation officers under the Wildlife Act, they don't destroy bears simply for being present in our neighborhoods. They are mandated to destroy bears that are a danger to public safety or to property. So when we see high numbers like 76 bears in Prince George, that means that we're having 76 incidences where the conservation officers were told that there was aggression happening. And from a lot of the work that Northern Bear Awareness has done, we know that a lot of that aggression is related to defending things that are attracting them, high-calorie food sources. That's drawn them into our neighborhoods and teaching them that our playgrounds, our residential areas, our buffet tables.
What I gather then is some implementation of a program on a municipal level can make a really big difference.
Yeah, it can. And to be clear, Prince George has a bylaw about securing wildlife attractants. Bylaw, you are required under city bylaw to secure your garbage so it cannot be accessed by a bear. But how you do that is left up to you. So that's one of the reasons why organizations like Northern Bear Awareness advocate for bear resistant, is to kind of take that human element out. And right now there's a reliance on residents to kind of figure out their own solution. But there is a bylaw.
Okay. How about compost?
REAPS, so here our own community nonprofit, Recycling and Environmental Action Planning Society, REAPS, but they have guidelines on how to make your compost bear resistant. And so does Northern Bear Awareness as well on their website, because there are ways to deal with primarily the smell. Fun fact, bears can smell 7 times better than a dog. So if you have leave something out stinky, a bear will be interested. So dealing with the smell is actually something that you can do with your compost, and they've got guidelines on how to do that. So if you're a keen composter, that doesn't mean that you can't. It just means that you just have to make a few different things to your compost to make it a little bit more bear resistant.
Composting programs, too, are expensive.
Yeah.
Typically not cheap on a municipal level.
Yeah, but then it's like kind of like short-term economic thinking versus long-term. Like long-term, having a more efficient waste management system that actually uses that waste to create things like fertilizer, it's kind of, I guess, in the environmental, we call ecosystem services. It does things that are beyond the immediate cost-benefit analysis. So in that long-term thinking, that needs to be considered as well. Like in the long-term thinking, what is it costing us to have so many bears getting into garbage in Prince George? That's something, it's hard to put a price tag on that, but there is a cost to having 76 bear mortalities and the COs running ragged going around your city dealing with it. And maybe we can't put a number on it, but that doesn't mean there isn't a cost.
That is Lauren Harding, associate professor at UNBC, whose current research projects explore the ways local livelihoods shape community attitudes towards human-bear coexistence. And prior to her commentary was president of the Northern Bear Awareness Society, Nicole Botten, based here in Prince George, Claylie Tanay.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca.